You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Joining me in studio is Nate. Nate, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Bill.
So I wanted to talk about some internet security, consumer security, things like that. Admittedly, these aren't topics that I'm all that familiar with, and I don't think you are either, really. But this is something that's been in the news a lot, I think, in the past year or so. We keep on seeing these data breaches like Home Depot and Target and various other companies, and those are ones where the numbers are getting stolen at the point of sale. I think mine got stolen at like a gas station or something like that. You know, I put it in and then they have the little skimmers or something like that. I don't know exactly how it works. And then, you know, there's also been the online ones, the various data breaches involving credit cards, sometimes, you know, passwords and things like that. So this is obviously a hot topic on people's mind. And periodically, you kind of see in some of these news articles about that, various kind of security analysts and commentators saying, hey, you know, we could be doing more to ramp up the technology or bring a higher level of security to these things. And the main obstacle seems to be kind of cost, like the credit card industries and stuff like that, and the, you know, companies like Target or Home Depot or whatever, they're more willing to spend money bailing people out of credit card theft than to spend the money, the big investment up front, on increasing security. And, you know, this is going to be one of our big ideas segments. This is another one where it's like, again, we don't have to necessarily know the specifics of where the existing technology is or what could happen. But, you know, we want to see what theoretically could happen.
Yeah, Bill, I also recently had my credit card information stolen. And, you know, all of a sudden there's people ringing up gas charges in Indiana or wherever. So just not something that's fun to deal with. Usually you can get it sorted out with a credit card company. But, you know, just having that thought in the back of your head of someone stealing your identity and spending your money on, you know, other things for them is certainly not enjoyable. And so I think you're right to, you know, bring up this issue and, you know, start talking about how we think about ways in which our identities and our financial information is protected.
Yeah. Now, I sort of had this idea that popped into my head, and we're going to circle back around to these credit cards in a moment, but it's like a sort of a separate topic about voting, right? So, you know, how do we vote? Is it, you know, can we make voting easier? Where are the current technologies with voting? I think a lot of people got really suspicious after some of the stuff in the 2000 and 2002 and 2004 elections. You know, maybe were electronic voting machines unreliable or had various problems, things like that. And people got kind of suspicious of that. And there's always been for, you know, pretty much since the World Wide Web became a relatively prevalent thing, there's been calls for, hey, let's have internet voting. Let's make it so you can vote by internet. And, you know, some countries have actually tried this, like Estonia, for example, is probably the most famous one for doing this. I think the first one you could do it in was the 2005 parliamentary elections there. And the numbers have been increasing since then. You know, every 4 or 5 years, whenever they have their elections, the numbers of people voting at home is increasing. I think it's up to about 15% in the most recent election, national election in Estonia, who voted online. And there's various procedures involved. I don't know all the details. It was a little bit hard to find English language, you know, recent sources on the status of that.
You mean you don't speak Estonian, Bill?
No, my Estonian's super rusty.
Okay.
But anyway, so I was looking into this, and one of the allegations that's been made about this system, unfortunately, and, you know, like Nate was mentioning to me before we started the segment, you know, Estonia is a pretty small place. It's not exactly the one you'd look to as a model necessarily.
Although I would like to visit Tallinn at some point. Apparently it's quite nice.
Yeah, that's probably cool, but, you know, this is a small country that, and it's unfortunately basically the only model we have for like relatively large scale internet voting. Actually, some other countries do have sort of unofficial internet voting. And basically the way that works is like in a country like France or Britain, maybe Canada, you have sort of non-elected office positions being elected. Like you might vote on, say, members of, you know, who's the party leadership in your country or something like that. Or do you approve the platform? Or do you approve going into a coalition government with a different party? So some of that stuff where it's not, you know, an official national election, that can be done by internet voting, and that's sort of at the discretion of the parties. But from a governmental standpoint, we really only have Estonia to look at. And some internet security quote-unquote professionals, that tends to be usually sort of like the white hat hackers or whatever, have said, and who knows if this is true, but they have alleged that in Estonia, the only country that we have as this example, that it is possible to hack the voting system there, despite the various precautions like mailing you a PIN in the physical mail to vote and things like that, or, you know, that you have to use your national ID card or whatever. they said they've hacked the system, changed the totals, and been able to get out without leaving traces or whatever. And again, I'm, you know, maybe the government disputes that or whatever, but that is somewhat alarming that that in our only example is suggesting that maybe it's not possible to do this securely. So we have basically two situations where internet security becomes a really important issue. You have the voting and you have the credit cards. And, you know, my idea that I was thinking of is, what if we said in the United States, what if we had the US government say, we want internet voting to be possible. And in order to do that, we need to have really secure internet systems to be able to do that and have that not, you know, jeopardize the outcomes of any elections or throw it into question, anything like that. That it needs to be super top notch. Now, of course, right now, maybe in light of the healthcare.gov situation, people are a little bit skeptical of that. But of course, that was partly like an outsourcing issue and stuff. You know, they had a private contractor that kind of screwed up on that and so on and so forth. But in general, the government has done pretty good work in many cases on some of their websites. Is it possible for the government to make it a priority and say, we want people to be able to vote securely in state and local and national elections in the United States, and we're going to work in within the government with, you know, our best resources at the NSA and whatever, and make it so that we have secure connections that everyone can vote and participate in these elections without having to go to the polling places? And I think that similar, kind of analogous to the space race and the space program stuff in the 1960s and so on, you know, we got a lot of benefits. We still hear about that. Oh, we got all these benefits from doing that program. They were civilian uses. You know, if we made it a priority to do something like this and make it so secure that you could vote safely, hundreds of millions of people vote safely in these elections and securely, that would probably radiate out to a lot of technologies that could be exported to the private sector, you know, to make e-commerce safer, to make credit cards safer, things like that. You know, I don't know the specifics because this is sort of hypothetical, but it seems like the possibilities could really be kind of endless.
Yeah, Bill, just looking at the example of Estonia, apparently the test that was conducted on it by various researchers and security experts, a couple of people from the University of Michigan, found that basically it was about 10 years out of date, and it was quite possible to, as you said, basically go on their computer and change totals, whether that's through malware that you're actually, you know, installing on people's computers and using that data that they're inputting to grab their PIN numbers or ID cards or whatever and then cast a replacement vote. There's also the possibility of a server-wide attack because a lot of the data apparently is stored at the main servers, and something that Estonia has actually dealt with recently, because in 2007 there was a DOS attack, denial of service, that swamped, I think, the parliament banking system, all sorts of different parts of their government, and of course, it's probably Russia behind that.
Yeah, I think there was some dispute with Russia at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, especially if you're talking about the voting aspects, you know, we all know that Russia likes to get involved in some of the elections, whether that's through, you know, poison or whatnot. You know, then next time it could be hacking onto the, you know, election servers for, you know, an Eastern European country nearby that they want to have influence over. So, you know, just in terms of Estonia, there's still rightly a lot of pretty key questions there. When it comes to the U.S., I think we're at less risk of an attack by, like, Russia trying to change the election results or whatever. But at the same time, there are definitely still people out there, hackers, that, you know, would have some sort of interest in creating some sort of destabilization or casting doubt on election results. And that could lead to some severe problems. So I think any sort of online voting system would have to be tested and retested again and, like, rolled out over several years in order to make sure they had it, you know, perfectly operational and secure. What I do think is necessary is maybe a move to just longer voting times, because I think a lot of the reason people don't go vote is that it's just they have to wait in line after work, and there's all sorts of, like, hassle associated with it that people don't really want to just deal with if they're, you know, even a little bit apathetic about, you know, the election results. So if we were able to change it so that, you know, there were, you know, days or even weeks ahead of the quote-unquote election day where you could go and vote, and if, you know, you went and voted using, you know, like, optical scan machines or, you know, a different type of system where you did have faith that the vote that you put down was the vote that was going to be recorded. So, you know, we all have the discussions about the hanging chads, you know, we had back in Florida in 2000, how that wasn't necessarily clear. Some of the old antiquated vote machines. And then still remember the Simpsons episode right before the election where Homer's at the voting machine and he pushes the Obama button and it lights up McCain. And, you know, is from there, you know, he's trying to fix the mistake. And, it, you know, with all the stuff of various election difficulties we've had over the past decade and a half, we really don't want to be engaging in, you know, further wide-scale changes that could potentially backfire and cast some doubt on election results. So I want online voting, but I just think it needs to, you know, be a long-term project rather than let's try to get it in for the next election cycle.
Right. I mean, that's kind of why I think, you know, you can involve the expertise of the private contractors, you can involve, you know, NSA or whatever, but like, do this as a legitimate government effort. Put the time and energy in, do it right, don't do it quickly, you know, make sure that people have confidence in this. But as you said, in the meantime, and we've talked about this so many times at this point on this show, you've got to make voting easier. And apparently you've also got to convince a large segment of the population that voting should be easier.
Yeah, because it seemed like during the last election, there was a large pushback on these expanded voting times, and there wasn't too much of an argument by Republicans for constricting voting times, really, other than that it benefited Democrats.
Yeah.
I seriously didn't hear any other explanation.
Yeah, I mean, in the one direction, we've got the Republicans pushing the voter ID laws and things like that, that we've talked about that disproportionately affect people of color, young people, elderly, all that. But then on the other direction, like you said, making it literally harder to vote, even if you have passed all the other hurdles, you know, and like Nate said, I mean, there's the hassle element, but there's also just the, like, you know, people working two or three jobs, not being able to actually get to the polling place, or that there's, you know, lines that are going on too long, that the, you know, because, and the lines are shortened if you have plenty of voting machines. And we've seen so many times all over the country situations where, you know, the white affluent areas have more voting booths and voting machines in their polling place, even having fewer voters registered there than in some of the minority areas. I mean, we've seen this again and again. And, you know, to give a really recent example, there was a dispute in Georgia, and this is, I think, out in a suburb further out from, you know, in the general Atlanta area, metro area, but it's a suburban county that's very heavily weighted toward the black population. I think it might be actually majority black population there, and this is one of the few places in the country that has that, like an entire county that's like that. And there was this big shopping mall that a lot of residents in the county went to. And there was a proposal to add more, you know, early voting options with voting booths in the shopping mall. You figure, oh, people are already there. Like, let's, you know, make it really easy. And they can go sometime in the week before or whatever. And this white Republican state senator from a different part of the state flipped out about this and, like, did not even try to conceal. Like, he literally said, this proposal will make it easier for African Americans to vote, and therefore I oppose it. And then he would say, like, because it will help the Democrats. But, I mean, the first part of that sentence is still there.
Wasn't there that, I think, Pennsylvania Republican who was caught on tape basically just telling his constituents, we're passing this voter ID law because it'll help us win the election.
Yeah, that it would, it, you just, know, Romney would be
come president. It's just so naked. It's not even, we're not even trying to come up with, you know, BS arguments about, oh, this is actually pretty important to maintain the integrity. I mean, they said that, but I didn't hear any, like, convincing, you know, thought out detailed argument about, okay, actually, the fact that we're keeping these voting places open longer actually... I can't even come up with an excuse.
No, if you really, really dig into it, the answer that you get every time is voting is a privilege, not a right, which, okay, that's incorrect. It's in the Constitution, and also we have Voting Rights Act. But they say, you know, that voting is a very important thing. It shouldn't be left to just anyone. It should be people who are really engaged and can show up when they're supposed to show up, blah, blah, blah. You know, that it should be difficult to vote. You should have to pass certain hurdles. Which is crazy considering how low the voter participation in this country already is. But
I mean, none of those things you just said are, I mean, none of them actually argue against these closing times that were advocated, because okay, you said voting is important. Okay, well, voting, if it's important, then we should, you know, allow more time for people to vote if they think that's so important. And okay, so, you know, we need to create, it should be a difficult, okay, but the hurdles that are supposed to be there in place are not logistical. They're supposed to be, okay, are you a citizen? Are you engaged in the democratic process and, like, know who these candidates are that you're voting for? So, I don't know, I just, it seems all pretty,
yeah, well, if you keep getting into it with them, eventually you hit the argument where they say, the United States was set up to be a republic, not a democracy. And the entire rest of the world goes, those are the same thing. A republican system, like a republic, is a representative democracy in the entire rest of the world, except maybe like a Democratic People's Republic of whatever that's like clearly not a real republic or something. The only basic exception to this is the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is very explicitly set up, you know, and if you look at the rhetoric from early in the Iranian Revolution from Ayatollah Khomeini, you get these points that where he specifically said, democracy is a Western concept. We don't want democracy here. We want a system where there is some public participation, but it is ultimately controlled by the Guardian Council. That's why they call it that. It's literally a council of people, you know, these old dudes who are supposed to like block certain legislation and stuff like that if it's insufficiently, you know, Islamic, blah, 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 under the interpretation that they have. That's what a republic is. You know, and that's what a republic originally was in Europe, but that's not what a republic means in the rest of the, you know, industrialized world at this point. Basically, if you have a republic, it's not supposed to be anymore just a bunch of old Venetian dudes and like, or like guys in, you know, the Dutch republics that are calling all the shots. I mean, yeah, that is what we set up.
The merchant kings.
Yeah, the merchant kings. I mean, that's, yeah, that's what we set up originally in the United States, but we moved away from that immediately.
Well, yeah, I mean, just to go to the history of why we're actually voting on this day, the first Tuesday of November or whatever, because, and there's actually, you know, people have gone back and studied the congressional record debating this issue. I mean, it was just because in November the harvest was done, and on Tuesday was when there was a day free to go into town and vote, because Wednesday was usually market day, and you had the Sabbath on Sunday, so you don't usually travel into town on the Sabbath. So, okay, we've got to pick a day. It's Tuesday.
And Monday might be a federal holiday.
Yeah, so basically it's just a day. It's just a day they picked. There's no reason why we should continue only having that day, because we're no longer an agrarian society. We're running the horse and buggy carriage into town in order to vote at the courthouse or the general store or wherever. So, just, okay, another thing that's tangentially related to this, voting by mail is a big thing that's started up in, I believe, Oregon? Is
really, yeah, Oregon has 100%. You cannot vote except by mail in Oregon. And it is an option as an alternative in a lot of other places.
And
California and Colorado.
I mean, maybe I'm putting a little too much faith in the U.S. postal system, but I feel like it's a little more secure in the internet still at this point.
That's probably accurate.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that could be another thing where we're not necessarily going to full online voting or full voting where the polls are open, you know, 24/7 for the couple of weeks of leading up to the election, you know, as crazy as that would be. You know, voting by mail, it just, that seems like a pretty easy way. You get your ballot in the mail, you send it in, and it goes to the election workers at the mail office, and, you know, everything's sort of like, it seems like there's less chance of something going wrong in that case than it would be if it's like, select your candidate from like the online poll, click to show result, five simple tricks. So, okay. I would like to see online voting, but I think that
there's a lot of stuff.
I think you need to take a multifaceted approach to fixing some of these issues, which includes longer voting hours and vote by mail and maybe eventually having online voting. So I think we should get there eventually, but, you know, maybe not yet.
Yeah, I just hope, though, that, like, if we work on stuff like, you know, voting online or credit card security, that we make sure that we're getting those mutual benefits back and forth, that if the technology's improved, if, you know, for one, that it's improved for the other, because both of those type of things benefit, you know, the vast majority of the American people. And, you know, anything that's going to have like a big public interest benefit like that is a good thing. And in my mind, that's, you know, kind of a role of government aspect.
Yeah. And when you're thinking about information technology security systems, especially for something as large as like an election, that's definitely, if you set up something like that successfully, I think it's going to have carryover to other, you know, different types of IT industries, or maybe this is possible because there are breakthroughs in other aspects of internet security, and then they can apply that to the election. So it's all very symbiotic.
All right. Well, Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment.